Good morning, everybody. It's an honor to be able to come and speak to you. Over the years, I just want you to know before we get started, that over the past couple of years, you know, you guys putting up with my in-laws, you guys have a special place in my heart. And when I was thinking about, you know, coming and speaking to you guys in the format of a gospel meeting, you know, I really tried to think about, and I thought about it long and hard. And I didn't have a lot of conversations with them, but I thought about what are some of the things that you guys need specifically here in Sanford. And in the course of doing that, I had a couple of thoughts that come to mind. First of all is you guys are a great group of people, and I'm honored just to know you. Second of all, I'm also very impressed with the work that you guys have done over the last couple of years. Now, I mean, I don't know the long history of the church here in Sanford, but I know that when I first started coming, when Brian was hired, and I first started coming down here every so often, that there was a lot less people than there are now. You guys have grown tremendously, and I applaud you for that, and I commend you for that. And when I was thinking about some of the things I'm going to talk about, I think I need to throw that out there first of all, is that you guys have done some really good things and some good work, and there's a lot of work left to do. So in thinking about all of that, what would be a good thing, a good theme or topic to do a series of lessons? And I kept coming back to the book of Nehemiah. And in the book of Nehemiah, You have a group of people that had done some good things. They had gone back to Jerusalem and rebuilt the temple, and that was quite an accomplishment. That was a monumental task for them to do that. And then they kind of got stagnant a little bit after they had rebuilt the temple. We read about that in the book of Ezra. And then we come to Nehemiah, and then we're going to pick up in Nehemiah chapter 1 in just a few minutes, okay? But I think that was kind of my thought process in coming up with a series of lessons for you guys. So I'm really excited about being able to come down here and speak to you because I love all of you. Y'all mean a lot to me. Because I think I've been able to witness some of the rebuilding that you guys have done over the last couple of years, and I respect that a lot. And you guys mean the world to me. Y'all have accepted me every time I've ever come down here with open arms. And I really, really appreciate that. And I am humbled and honored and really excited to be able to come and speak to you over the course of this meeting. You know, they say that let's go ahead and get right to it. When you start a 12-step recovery program, they say that the first step is admitting that you have a problem. Now, over the last couple of weeks, I have tried to shed some pounds. Now, getting good and disgusted with myself did not just start on the day that I decided to go on a diet. I could feel my pants getting a little bit tighter, and I looked in the mirror every day, so I had an idea of what was going on. But did I start a diet when I knew it was going? No, I put it off. Hey, let's wait till after the holidays. Let's wait till after holidays. And then you get to about the end, the middle of January, and then it's something else that pops up. You may have something going on at church. You may have a party. I'll wait till after that, and then I'll start doing better. Isn't that what we all do? Is that when we know that we have something that we need to work on, but we don't want to come to grips with it. And I think that was going on a little bit during the days of the Jews in Jerusalem, during the time of the events depicted in the book of Nehemiah. And I think that happens to us as Christians today, and it also happens to us collectively as congregations of the Lord's church. And one of the things that stands out about Nehemiah is Nehemiah, he was willing to look under the hood. He was willing to kick the tires, so to speak. He took a good, honest look at what needed to be done, and then went from there. And I think for a lot of us, that's exactly what we need to do. We put off coming to grips with what we know to be painfully obvious and for a variety of different reasons. You know, to admit that we have fallen short in an area is to admit that we are wrong. It may hurt our feelings. It may make us depressed in some kind of way. You know, for a lot of us, it may be the fear of being obligated to do the work to fix it, whatever the case may be. Okay, there's a lot of reasons why we put off things that we know that we need to do. In the case of trying to shed a few pounds, I look forward to eating good home cooking. And I dreaded the thought of not being able to go to Ms. Ann's house over there when she was cooking and eat whatever I want to eat. I enjoyed that when we get together. We have a good time and it's good. And if I'm going to make that kind of effort, I know that I'm going to have to neglect some things that I really, really like. So it's much easier for us to try to put that off in our minds. And I think we have things like that in our lives all the time. And I think we certainly have things like that of a spiritual nature in our lives and also in our congregations. You know, for comfort's sake, we just put it off because of the effort that's going to be required to fix it. So when we look at the book of Nehemiah here, and we're going to see Nehemiah taking a good, honest appraisal of things here in Nehemiah chapter 1 and the early beginning passage or section of Nehemiah chapter 2, we see him taking an honest appraisal, a good hard look at what needed to be done. But first of all, let's go ahead and do a little background on the book of Nehemiah, and let's set the historical stage for the book, because it's going to carry us throughout the rest of the meeting. Nehemiah was a Jewish captive who was the cupbearer for the Persian king Artaxerxes, and the events depicted in the book are around 444 B.C. It was during the 20th reign of King Artaxerxes that these events begin in Nehemiah chapter 1 verse 11 and also Nehemiah chapter 2 verse 1. Prior to the events of Nehemiah, we read in the book of Ezra where King Cyrus allowed Jews to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple under the leadership of Zerubbabel. And we read about it in Ezra 1 verses 1 and 2. And then after some delays and difficulties during the brief reigns of two other Persian kings, Darius the Great, y'all may have heard that name, the Persian king Darius, he permitted Zerubbabel to continue the work, and they still had some obstacles, but he was permitted to continue the work on the reconstruction of the temple in Jerusalem, and we can read about some of that in Ezra chapter 4, verses 25 through Ezra 5, verse 1. And this occurred approximately 513 B.C., and by the time we get to the book of Nehemiah, the returned captives that went back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple, they had been back in Jerusalem for 57 years. The temple had been rebuilt, but all was not well in Jerusalem. And now we pick up in Nehemiah chapter 1. So let's look at Nehemiah 1. The words of Nehemiah the son of Hakaliah: it came to pass in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. Now, let's stop right there for just a minute. Have you guys ever asked a question that you really didn't want the answer to? Now, when we look at the reaction in the succeeding verses that Nehemiah, when he got his answer to the question, how are things going on in Jerusalem, man? We ask questions like that all the time, don't we? I ask Brian all the time, how's it going in Sanford? And I'm really not asking, you know, what's going on in the town of Sanford. Oh, yeah, we got a great barbecue joint that's just been built into. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking him, how's everything at church in Sanford? How is everybody doing? Are you, you know, is everything going well? What you guys got going on? I'm talking about you guys. Don't y'all ask questions like that to other members of the church from other places all the time? You know, you say, how's everything going in Kinston, for example? I got a lot of friends in Kinston. How's everything going over there? You know, and that's what we're talking about. And sometimes we get answers to those kinds of questions that we really didn't want. Has that ever happened to you guys? You ask somebody, you know, how's everything going in the church, wherever, and they give you a very alarming answer, because we care about those folks. You know, they're God's people too. They're Christians too, just like us. Okay, and we can, and it concerns us greatly whenever we hear the answer to that. Evidently, Nehemiah, when he heard the answers, we'll see in the next couple of verses, evidently the Jews in Jerusalem didn't have Facebook, because he didn't know. They must not have had Twitter, because he didn't know. Let's look at his reaction here in verse 3. And they said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. So it was that when I heard these words, then I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. We see four things here, four things that Nehemiah did whenever he heard the calamitous situation. And I guess you could say, during that time period, it really was a catastrophic kind of situation. If you didn't have a wall around your city, what were you vulnerable to? Yeah, somebody could come, you know, attack you. Okay, so they were they had a considerable problem, and it took them 6 years to rebuild the temple, as we read about in Ezra, and they had been there for 57 years total. So somewhere along the line, the Jews in Jerusalem got very stagnant with the work. Does that ever happen in some of our congregations today, where we kind of get a little stagnant? And we may go through periods, you know, of growth, and periods of maybe we have some folks move away that cannot be helped. And then we also go through some periods that are perfectly within our control, where everybody is very fervent and zealous about what we're doing. And then for some reason, we kind of get a little eh. Isn't that kind of what happens in our congregations from time to time? And it's within our control. Okay? And we look at four things here that Nehemiah did whenever he got the answer to the question that he didn't like. The first two things were spiritual/emotional responses. What's the first two things that Nehemiah did? He wept, and then what did he do? He mourned. Those are emotional kinds of things. He sat down and he cried and he was upset. And I contend with you, brethren, that before meaningful and sustainable change can occur, we must care. We got to care. You're never going to have meaningful and sustainable change personally as individual Christians or collectively as congregations of the Lord's church or the Lord's church at large in our country and in our world. We're never going to have sustainable and meaningful change until we care like Nehemiah did. Okay? It affected him on an emotional level. Nehemiah purposed in his heart at that time, didn't he, what he was going to do. He committed himself beforehand what he was going to do. In our worship, we're commanded to worship in spirit and in truth. Is it possible for us, even this very morning, to go about our worship hour and do all the right things, but merely take a check-the-box approach to our worship with no emotional investment, with no reflection on the magnitude of what Christ has done for us, what God has, how He's made a way for us, and we just go through the motions of that. Is that possible? Yes. Before we ever do anything that's meaningful and sustainable, we first have to care. We've got to care. And I think sometimes apathy can be a problem with individual Christians and also with our congregations collectively. Church attendance, personal Bible studies, evangelistic efforts as a whole, mission work, all of that begins because Christians care. Okay? You know, I'm going to be a sorry Bible class teacher if I don't care about it. Does that make sense? Okay, moving on from that. All right, now, the second two things that Nehemiah did were more spiritual/mental activities. He fasted and he prayed. He fasted and he prayed. Okay, now, so he cared, and now he is going through the process of while he was fasting, he was sitting there thinking about, contemplating a plan. He was coming up with a plan. He heard that there was a need in Jerusalem. He really cared about it in a very, very meaningful way. And then he began to formulate a plan. You know, I've heard some people say that a bad plan is better than no plan. Maybe, maybe not. At least with a bad plan, you find out what doesn't work. If you have no plan and you do nothing, you don't learn anything. I'll give you a prime example of this. In Goldsboro, we did a soup kitchen one time. And we learned some valuable lessons about what did not work. Yeah, it was not. Now, I think we had one person obey the gospel, so it was a success. Okay? It was a success. But did we have the level of the response that we wanted as a congregation? No. But it was better than doing nothing because we found out what didn't work. Okay, I'm not going to go into details about that particular program, but in some ways, it's better to have a plan that needs to be improved than to not be willing to have any kind of plan at all. So we see this from these four responses of Nehemiah, is that he was involved emotionally and also he thought about what needed to be done. The first two responses is similar to what Ezra did in Ezra chapter 9, verses 3 through 5, when he got carried away, when the children of Israel got carried away in marrying taking foreign wives, okay, amongst the neighboring pagan peoples. They took wives in direct violation of what they were commanded to do. And Ezra had a similar response. We read that he rent his garment and his mantle. He plucked off his hair and beard and sat down for a time. Okay, kind of a similar response of what we read that Nehemiah did. Let's pick up in verse 5 here in Nehemiah 1. And I said, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both my father's house and I have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, nor the ordinances which you commanded your servant Moses. Now his answer there is a little bit different. He lumps himself in, doesn't he? Now here you got Nehemiah, who's all the way up as the cupbearer in Persia, which that area would be northward of Jerusalem, a considerable distance. You know, it would be kind of in the direction of Syria and modern day Iran, or as the country folks say, Iran. Okay, in that direction. Okay, so he's all the way in another country, and yet he lumps himself in with the sins of the Jews who were in Jerusalem during that time. I find his response, his prayer, to be very, very ironic. And we know it is. Am I going to be judged eternally for the sins of somebody else? No. No. Okay? That's we know that. But when it's talking about the needs of us collectively, the needs of us collectively, so for the church in Sanford, of which you are all a part, and for the Lord's church at large, of which we are all a part, we are in this thing together. So when there is a need and when there is something that needs to be done, I cannot pass the buck and say, well, Brian should have done it. He's the preacher. He gets paid. Brian's job. Okay, that, and we can't take that approach. Okay? Because Nehemiah, even in a foreign land, lumped himself in with the Jews that had gone back to Jerusalem. And I find that to be very, very interesting. And we see some other occasions. There's so many. I'm going to give you a couple of where maybe the neglect of a few affected the whole. We know the story in Joshua chapter 7, verse 1 about Achan. You know, they obeyed God's commands to a T. They kept their mouth shut for how many days was it when they walked around Jericho? Can you believe? That is hard to believe. You can get a group of people to keep their mouth shut for 5-10 minutes. And they kept their mouth shut for that long. And then when they let out that yell, the walls came down. And they handled their business and defeated Jericho in a very thorough way. And what were they commanded not to do? Don't take any of the spoils. And Achan couldn't help himself. So then when they went to the next city of Ai, what happened? They were repelled. People died on account of Ai's Achan's sin when they attacked Ai. So the actions of one affected the whole. We also see another example of this in Numbers chapter 13. We see where 10 of them rascal spies. You know what I'm talking about? The unbelieving, unfaithful spies discouraged the people despite the words of Joshua and Caleb. It was kind of like they outnumbered them 10-2, and it held the entire nation of Israel, the children of Israel, it held them back because of the actions of these 10. Okay, so we see where, and those are just, and we could go on and on if we wanted to with other kinds of examples, but these are two examples where the actions of a few influences the whole. And we also have, other kinds of examples where it's the situation is flipped, where the actions of a few impacted the whole for good, most notably the sacrifice of our Lord. The actions of a few, the faithfulness of one, his willingness to do what needed to be done, has led to salvation for all of us. So we understand this concept here. If we flip to the New Testament in Romans chapter 1, verse 32, it states, "Who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them." And the reason why I mention that passage is because even though Nehemiah was in another country, He was willing to take action to help the Jews in Jerusalem during their time of stagnation. Does that make sense? He didn't act like that it was okay. He didn't act like it was okay. All right, now, am I trying to suggest, though, let's don't take this concept too far in the Lord's church today. Am I trying to suggest at all that one congregation has authority over another? Not at all. That's not what I'm trying to suggest. I'm not suggesting in any way that an elder or somebody in authority, you know, from somewhere else has authority over you guys. Not saying that at all. Okay? I want to get that out there. I don't want anybody trying to say that, because I could see where, you know, people might withdraw that kind of conclusion, and we want to keep it in the context of what we're talking about. So Nehemiah responded, and he resolved himself to submit to God's will and to help these folks in Jerusalem, to help the Jews there as best that he could. Let's pick up in verse 8. Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest part of the heavens, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Now these are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. Now, I think I'm going to add in a question here. Who are the redeemed today? It's us. We're the redeemed. We're the ones who, at one time or another, due to our own sin, were cast out to the farthest wherever. We were far from God because of our sin, and we have been brought close to Him due to the sacrifice of His Son on the cross and our obedience to the gospel. Let's pick up in verse 11. O Lord, I pray, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name, and let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. For I was the king's cupbearer. When he's talking about this man, he's talking about King Artaxerxes. You see, Nehemiah was one of the only people who had even a chance to be able to go back to Jerusalem, because he had a connection with the Persian king. He was his cupbearer. And when he went before King Artaxerxes and his countenance was sad, and he looked a little downtrodden, the king noticed something was wrong and said that you never come in here looking like that. Are you sick? What's going on? I'm paraphrasing. And then he told him about what was going on with his brethren back in Jerusalem, and that he needed to go help them. And the king allowed him to do that. He had a unique position to be able to help the people of God in Jerusalem. I don't think that it would have been the same had some other Jewish captive in Persia requested an audience with the king. I don't really know that the story would have turned out the same way. But because of who Nehemiah was as the king's cupbearer, and because he had that relationship, he was in the unique position to help. And rather than sit there living a pretty good life, comfortable life, in the king's court, I mean, he had it made in the shade, let's be honest. He could have sat right there in the king's court. He would have never went hungry. He would have lived in relative comfort. I mean, he was the cupbearer. He wasn't breaking his back in servitude. I mean, let's don't get it confused. I mean, he was a captive, but he had it pretty good. In James chapter 4, verse 17, in the New Testament, we read, to him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. If we have the opportunity to be able to help, but are willfully ignorant or we're negligent, we're going to be judged for that. And I think Nehemiah, he understood that he had this unique position, and that spurred him on with a great deal of zeal in order to do whatever he could do to help. So let's take a look at what he would do here in Nehemiah chapter 2. He was given building materials. He was given wood by King Artaxerxes. You could tell that he had conducted himself in such a way with the Persian king that the Persian king respected him a lot. Can you tell that from that account? And we don't have time to really read it in detail, but we get the impression that the king was very supportive of Nehemiah's efforts. But not all of the Gentiles were supportive. In Nehemiah 2, verse 10, we meet the nemesis, Sanballat and Tobiah. Sanballat is the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite, and we'll get to them a little bit later. They were a bunch of rascals, so to speak. They were not supportive at all, even though the king himself was supportive. And then let's pick up here in Nehemiah 2, verse 11, and pull some things out. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I arose in the night, and I had a few men with me. I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem, nor was there any animal with me except the one on which I rode. And I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well and the refuse gate, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were burned with fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal under me to pass. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned, and the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or others who did the work. You see, he went out in the middle of the night and didn't tell anybody what he was doing so that he could make an honest appraisal. Now, tell me if y'all have ever done this. Okay, we're having company or somebody calls and says, look, I'm coming to your house for whatever reason. So the mess that I'd like to blame it on my kids, that's what I'm going to do. So the mess that my kids have made, guess what we do? We don't have time to really clean or vacuum or whatever, but all that mess that my kids have brought out in the living room, we open up a cabinet and it all goes in. Has anybody ever done that? In a hurry. You didn't have time to really, because you don't want people coming in your house and they see a bunch of mess. Okay, so you do a... Does that really mean that your house is clean? No, it's a quick fix. It's a quick fix to try to cover up the fact that your house is not clean. So Nehemiah, when he took this honest appraisal, he didn't tell anybody. He didn't tell anybody. It's like at work when the principal comes in your classroom and he doesn't tell you that he's coming. He wants to see what you're doing in your classroom at school. He doesn't want you to be prepared for it. Okay, do y'all know what I'm talking about when they do those observations, whatever? Okay, but that's what they do. Okay, and I think a lot of places of employment do this. They do a little pop-in inspection, make sure things are what they're supposed to be, and that's exactly what Nehemiah did. I think they would have tried their best had the nobles and priests and the officials known. They would have tried to do something similar to that. They would have tried to do something cosmetic or superficial, try to clean things up as best they could so that Nehemiah wouldn't get, that he wouldn't understand the depth of the problem. See, Nehemiah was willing to look under the hood. He was willing to take an honest appraisal. In James chapter 1, verses 22 through 24, but be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. It's kind of like me when I went in there to try to lose some weight. I could look in that mirror and see myself growing not up the other way, and then ignoring that for a couple of weeks. Because I didn't want to come to grips with it. Okay? That is not what Nehemiah did. He wanted to make an honest assessment of what needed to be done. And I think here's some questions that we probably need to ask when we make an honest assessment. Here's some questions. Is God the top priority in my life? And I'm talking about us as individuals. Is my knowledge of God's Word greater this year than it was at this time last year? Am I teaching anyone in a personal Bible study? Are my children learning from my example that spiritual things are more important than physical and temporary earthly things? Am I a gossip? Am I a complainer? Am I just ill? Am I a stick in the mud? I think we need to ask ourselves that. Am I a stick in the mud? And do people want to get along with me? Do they want to work with me? Am I a part of that problem if that's not the case? Am I an asset to my congregation? I think that is these are the kinds of questions that an honest appraisal from a spiritual standpoint involves. Not questions too often on a personal level. These are the kinds of questions that we tend to ask. What about our congregation do I like or I dislike? That's not an honest appraisal. That's simply an opinion question with a standard that's up to me. That's completely irrelevant to where I'm at spiritually. Am I appreciated? That's a same category. That's not an honest appraisal. Why didn't so-and-so come and talk to me? You see the difference that I'm trying to make between the questions that we sometimes tend to ask and really making an honest appraisal? And then also, when it comes to us collectively, there are some areas that all congregate. Look, I'm not picking on y'all in Sanford. I'm thinking about us in Goldsboro and churches at large, about things that we all need to be doing collectively as congregations. And in many cases, when we ask these questions, it really brings up a red flag. We need to do something. These are some questions that would be a part of an honest appraisal as a congregation. Are we worshiping in spirit and in truth? Are we reverent in our worship? I think we need to ask that question. Are we doing things decently and in order? Are we evangelistic as a congregation? Is our focus outwardly to the lost, or are we too involved in our own internal programs? Are our members sound on issues related to doctrine? Are we developing men to be elders? Too often, I think, as congregations, we tend not to make this kind of honest appraisal, and we tend to, these superficial kinds of questions tend to take over the bulk of our reflection as a congregation, sadly to say. We tend to get carried away with things such as this. How does the yard look? Are we sending a flower arrangement to so-and-so? What are we doing for the high school graduates? Are the youth having a party or a get-together? Now, is there anything wrong with in and of itself of thinking about the yard or the youth having a fellowship or any of that? Those are not bad things, but should they require the same amount of our attention as something like evangelism? Absolutely not. What in the world are we doing if that requires or that is taking up the bulk of our attention as Christians individually and also as congregations collectively? And I'm afraid, sadly to say, that some of us and some congregations have that backwards, and I pray that that's not the case here in Sanford. And if it is, I'm trying to jolt you out of it. Okay? All right, now, look in verse 17 of Nehemiah 2. Then I said to them, "You see the distress we are in. how Jerusalem lies waste and its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach. And in some places, the church of today is in distress as well. Many of our congregations are dying. Many of our individual Christians are suffering. And sadly, I'm afraid that many of us are in denial to that. We're in denial. It's just like me walking in front of that mirror knowing that my belt is tighter. But I don't want to really come to grips with I got to do something different. Okay? In Hebrews chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, for if the word spoken through angels proved steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed to us by those who heard him? The key word in that passage is the word neglect. Neglect. The real question for us is, are we keeping the main thing? The main thing is God pleased with us. And in our next lesson, we're going to build upon this. In our worship time, we're going to build on this. And we're going to move through Nehemiah chapters 2 and 3. And now that Nehemiah has made an honest appraisal, now what? Thank you for your kind attention. Thank you so much.